Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 9:46 a.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 24th and Merry Christmas to everyone who's celebrating it. Well, when we look at gold, it is up to test the $1,500 area. And this is also the region of the sequence of lower rally highs that's been in evidence since the beginning of September. So the big question now is how much of this gain is it going to hold? I think it is worth considering that we are in the last few trading days of the year. Most people are no longer at their desks. This is going to be a very light trading session, and at the kinds of dynamic moves that we see at this time of the year, that's generally what people come back to in January, and they look at the markets and they go, golly, something really happened there. And when it's for an asset class that hasn't been doing much of anything for a few months, well, then people conclude, well, this might be worth a punt. So we're at a rather interesting juncture here for gold, because it hasn't really been doing anything for the last 4 months, but it did break out last year. It's not last year yet. It broke out earlier this year, and it had a pretty impressive run. So far, this looks like a first step above the base. Everything that the price has done over the course of the last 4 months helps to support that view. Well, I think it's also worth just looking at gold in other currencies, because when, for example, we look at it in Australian dollars, then it has done substantially better. It's at a new all-time high. And this is also looking like nothing more than a consolidation. When we look at it in Brazilian real, then what we're presented with is another consolidation. Maybe if we look at the yen, for example, which has been somewhat firmer, it's also firming now. This looks like nothing more than a first step above the base. And it's a long range, all the way through from 2013 through to quite recently. So when we start to think about what exactly is going on here, then gold is firming now from areas of support against a host of currencies, and that is supportive of the view that it's likely to do better. Well, why would gold be doing better? Well, I think we don't have to look very far for the answer to that. The world is being flooded with liquidity. And there's a debate out there as to whether this quantity of liquidity that is coming through from the Federal Reserve, from the ECB, from the Bank of Japan, whether all of that is going to avoid a contraction in the global economy, or whether we're going to have a reflation trade being the biggest bullish factor in 2020, or whether they're going to fail. But when we think about, well, what are the repercussions of all of that action? It's simple enough. There is going to be a ton of money printed. Even in a benign scenario, the USA is running trillion-dollar deficits. The Federal Reserve is back on a monetary easing cycle. The size of the balance sheet has expanded considerably over the course of the last 3 months, and it continues to march higher. The repo situation, which everybody brushed off as a non-event back in September, that was never going to be the case. You cannot have that kind of illiquidity in a globally significant part of the money markets and it simply amount to nothing at all. The fact of the matter is now that the Federal Reserve has had to further expand its mandate. And this almost feels de rigueur, that we've been through all of this before. Central banks have gone over the last decade from a fairly limited role in terms of money supply and interest rate setting to adopt a whole host of additional duties. And in the case of the ECB, for example, they really used to only have one mandate, which was to control inflation. Well, now they're also regulating the banking sector. They're engaged in bond buying. And then they have had to massage their own rules in terms of buying bonds in the first place. They are setting up a much more supportive environment for the banking sector and creating an equivalent of the Deposit Insurance Corporation that the USA has. When we look at what the Federal Reserve has been doing, then they have taken on responsibility for managing both sides of the yield curve. They are buying bonds. They have basically taken over the duties of Fannie and Freddie and have been buying mortgage bonds. Then they have also now started to engage in the repo market. Well, they haven't yet said that they are providing a standing repo facility, but it doesn't matter whether they've made the announcement or not. The reality is the same. They can't allow an illiquid environment to arise in the repo market. And that necessitates that they provide the necessary liquidity to ensure the market stays functional. And what it also means is that the Federal Reserve has always been viewed as the central banker to the world, or at least that's not quite the case, but certainly been the case in the last decade. Well, now they're the de facto central bank to the whole world because of this intervention in the repo markets. And that represents an unlimited call on the reserves. I don't think that that is really appreciated by the vast majority of investors. This unlimited call on the Fed's reserves is one of the most bullish factors for gold we can possibly come up with, because it means that there is an potentially unlimited call on paper money that can simply be lent into existence. And that is the reason why investors are beginning to turn back towards assets that cannot simply be lent into existence. So gold does look like it is a first step above the base. It is firming in almost every currency, and gold does best when it is strong in all currencies. So when we start to think about what are the assets that could potentially do better in 2020, well, gold has to be up there in the top three or four, and not least because it has been engaged in a process of consolidation. Well, then, if we look at the other side of the equation, Apple, for example, has been accelerating higher, and it continues to accelerate higher. This is the widest overextension relative to the trend mean we've seen in a decade. And I think that is something that also needs to be put into some perspective. Even if we look at this on a logarithmic scale chart, well, even then, thinking about that in terms of the percentages, well, we can see that it isn't quite as large as some of the other big moves that we've seen. But we also do know that when it pulls back, it regularly pulls back to the region of the 1,000-day moving average, or the 200-week moving average. And that has been by far the most useful medium-term trend smoothing device for this entire bull market that we've had for the last decade. It's as true for Apple as it is for the S&P 500. We've had three ranges, one above another, and each of those ranges has been completed with a clear upward break. And following the upward break, we've moved into these very persistent advances. If this is still a consistent environment, we're going to see that the breakout holds and we get another persistent advance. We're also in the we're not quite yet, but within a week we're going to be in the fourth year of the presidential cycle. And generally speaking, that is one of the better performers in terms of the four-year cycle. The second half of the third year generally tends to be to deliver a really impressive advance. We've at least had that over the last 3 months. It's also coincided with the Santa Claus rally. But the more important point is that when we've had the breakouts, the market has tended to rally for more than a year. Well, I think arguably the market broke out in probably June of this year, and it has been finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average ever since. If it continues to rally for more than a year, it's going to take us up to the presidential election in 2020. Then, of course, we're going to have big questions. We're going to have an awfully big discussion about which candidate is going to be beneficial for the U.S. economy, the global economy, the state of geopolitics and global or the global status quo. It's, of course, also going to represent an area of volatility when we get Super Tuesday and we get closer to seeing who the Democratic nominee is going to be. The stock market for the moment, it continues to rally. We have a short-term overbought condition. As long as it is holding the region of the 200-day moving average, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. During these lengthy periods of consistent trending that have followed the volatile periods of ranging, then the 200-day moving average has been by far the best trend smoothing device for the medium-term trend. The 1,000-day moving average is the trend smoothing device for the longer-term trend. And this is a secular bull market, so there are going to be times when we get persistent trends, and the medium-term trend smoothing device is the most appropriate measure of whether we're still in a consistent medium-term advance. Then it's the reversions back to the long-term moving average have generally provided the best buying opportunities, at least over the last decade. Now, then let's think about the Dow Gold ratio. Well, I do think that there is the potential here that we're going to see both appreciating at the same time. Stocks and gold do tend to do well when the value of fiat currency is deteriorating, and that does appear to be the one of the clearest conclusions that we have, that with the kind of money printing that is going on right now and the turn to deficit spending and fiscal stimulus that an increasingly large number of governments are deploying, then the nominal price of hard assets or assets that are attached to cash flows are likely to continue to advance. I do think, though, that there is the clear potential that gold is going to start to attract more investment interest simply because it is coming from a lower level. And then the gold miners have been ranging below $30 now for the better part of 7 years. And this is looking increasingly likely to be a base formation that is going to be resolved within the first quarter of 2020. So there certainly is a lot to think about over the course of the next year. If we are in fact going to have a global reflation trade, then Europe is probably the place that is most likely to benefit from that. Europe spent most of this year ranging, but it is now breaking up and out of a 5-year range. It's also likely that it is at least going to go back up and test the peaks put in 2007 and 2000. Well, when we also think about, well, what has been the motive force behind the underperformance of European equities, it's obviously the slowdown in growth, the very slow recovery from the sovereign debt crisis in the region, the fact that they have not written down the debts of the banking sector does raise the potential that Europe is looking into a Japanification type of scenario. But then, of course, the slowdown in demand for the region's exports, particularly in China, has been an additional source of uncertainty. If we do, in fact, get a reflationary trade, then that is likely to be beneficial for the Eurozone, for the UK, for all of Europe, really. The UK has got the additional potential to perform here for the simple reason that some of the uncertainty surrounding Brexit has been alleviated. The debate, at least, has been settled. There is going to be Brexit. Now the question is, what is the shape of the trade agreement the UK will form with the EU? But having a single party government ensures that the sclerosis that we've seen in Westminster over the course of the last couple of years is unlikely to be repeated. Now then, of course, with the stock market doing better, part of the reason for that has been the unwinding of the overbought condition that we've had in the pound, but we're seeing just the first evidence coming through in here today of steady. I think as long as the pound is holding the region of the trend mean, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral ranging. I think it's unlikely we're going to see the pound all the way back down to its lows. There is the clear potential that we're going to see volatility in 2020 because of brinksmanship relating to the negotiation of a trade deal. But I think there is increasing likelihood that we're going to have a benign outcome to the negotiations. And that is likely to be beneficial for UK assets. And particularly if the pressure that's been on the pound looks to moderate. Well, when we think about the UK, there are attractive valuations, there are higher yields, there is a stock market that is doing better, and there's the potential for currency appreciation over the medium term, if not quite in the short term. Then that is going to start ticking boxes for international investors where they've been a little gun-shy about participating in a big way in the UK market, but that will change. If particularly if a pro-growth strategy is deployed by the new government. And that's also something that we have to look forward to in 2020. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.